Blog Talk Radio.
Can you believe there are miracles going on in this creation during this generation for every nation? So for revelation. Some people struggle with the idea of miracles. Some are enclosed in nature. Some are higher than nature. But with that being said, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Soul Talk number 818, Proverbs Teachings to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, presentation number 35. We're broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio, as I just mentioned. We humbly assert we're the higher inner frequency. We're also broadcasting now live on Facebook. And we're also broadcasting live on TikTok, TikTok. So let's see how the program goes. And let's go a little bit more into what the program content is about. Blessed is our eternal creator. Shalom, peace, and blessing upon the entire human family condition. The greatest broadcast, our broadcast is taking place right now on May 5th. 2024 at 11 a.m. It's about 11:03 right now. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island equals AKA equals the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. The central topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of those powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. Our call-in number is 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Last week we had a couple of callers in that made the program a lot more organic. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And we're going to turn down the opening segue music, When You Believe by the Maccabees, it's a group of fine young men. And we did that a little prematurely, but that's okay. We're not broadcasting 50,000 watts like from one of the big New York City broadcasting stations. But with that being said, right now, we're now going to welcome in our co-host, Rambam teacher, student, and disseminator of the teachings of the Nesher Gadol, Rambam, by Moshe Ben Maimon. My mind is good morning, Dennis, Ryan. Dennis? Oh, technical problems once again. Okay, we're going to try to bring him more time. Dennis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Okay, Dennis, so first of all, I hope you had a wonderful, so far the first half of your weekend was blessed for you and your family, and hopefully we're going forward. And with that being said, of course, we'd like to turn to our latest information about who has been listening into us around the world. And still coming, number one, is the USA at 83.1%. Australia, 5.63%, followed by France, parlez-vous français, followed by Germany, speaking of Deutsch, Argentina, habla español, or I think maybe even Portugal, Portuguese, excuse me. With that being said, as well, we have listeners in South Africa And we have in the horn-shaped blessed country of Italy, we also have, yeah, we have also in Russia. We have less than 1% of our listeners, but that's okay. We'll work with what we can get. Slava Boga, praise God. Also, I'm happy to announce for another week, and it's leading into, I think, 3+ months now, when we check the worldometer, that the world population is still increasing, probably much to the chagrin of the eugenicists of the world who think there are too many people in the world. We're in this kinetic world population counter. We have over 8,107,000,000 human beings coming to the world today in particularly, which is May 5th. Unfortunately, 76,000 plus, almost 77,000 individuals have left this world to go to the next level of life, as coined by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But over 170,000 people, excuse me, have entered this world. So we welcome those who just came into this world. They should be blessed, and the family should be blessed. Those passed on, may the Almighty comfort those individuals. And again, this is flying in the face of those who would say there are just too many people in the world. Dennis, we're going to be talking about now in Blessed Souls Around the World, we're going to be talking about this idea of prayer. Where do we focus our intent? There are two. First, I want to mention the two general perspectives. There's the biblical perspective, straight from the scripture, that we should serve the Creator with all of our heart and all of our soul and all of our might. And then there, from the Jewish tradition, we have prayers that were composed more than almost, not 3,000 years, about 2,400 years. Oh, whoa, that was an interesting. Is that your doorbell ringing, Dennis?
No, that's my cell phone.
Okay, your cell phone's ringing. With that being said, we have an opportunity to glimpse at something. It's a little deep, but that's okay. Our audience are deep people because they want to understand God, and to understand God is, so to speak, to leave one's comfort zone. When one leaves one's comfort zone, there is room for growth, although at first it might seem a little bit painful, a little bit uncomfortable. But then when we take a look back, and that growth experience through coming into a consciousness we were truly unaware of, then usually the outcomes are pretty positive. But again, it's a certain toil that is taught in the teachings of the inner dimension of Torah, that when one becomes into a new awareness, then one can make a choice whether to toil in that idea or just let it pass by as if it never existed. So this is a teaching, actually, I'm gleaning inspiration from the father of Lubavitcher Rebbe. This is called, his name was Rav Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, and he lived from 1878, I think, until 1944, which he passed away from an untimely death because he was tortured so much by his the individuals who imprisoned him. But what he did was he did not have access to a printing press or even a pen and paper, but he wrote notes gathered by with ink used by his Rebbetzin, the Rebbetzin Chana Schneerson, that she would gather different types of berries and make some sort of ink that he would use, some sort of, I guess, handmade quill to write out these notes. So he wrote the following, and I'm looking forward to Dennis's input. And let's see here. So far, no one else has called in. That's fine. So here we go. The way to pray. Now, we're outsourcing from a teaching from the Zohar, which is usually connected to the inner dimension of Torah, where it says, one ought to plead for God's mercy first for himself and then for another, as it says in the verse in the book of Leviticus, chapter 16, verse 17, the Kohen Gadol, which is the high priest of Israel, shall atone first for himself, first and only then, and only then, and for the entire congregation of Israel. And we follow this way. That's from the Zohar, first section, 94b. So the emphasis is that one should go from a state of having to, so to speak, clean up his own household, himself, excuse me, then his household, then the community that he's a part of, and then the entire nation that he is representing, in this case, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. And I don't know how this manifest plays out with the other faiths of the world, but in the Jewish faith, the Mosaic laws, that once a year there was this hallowed day called Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would go into the Holy of Holies. He was only allowed to go in once a year. But before that, he had to make atonement for himself, and then his family, and then the community, and then the entire congregation of Israel. Now, that's a very, very disciplined form of prayer, where one must emphasize one's lackings and have the humility to pray to God to be forgiven. Now, there's another approach, and this is something that we advocate for the masses. I try to actually work on this more than the first style of prayer that we just talked about, based on the Talmudic tractate in Bava Kamma 92a, that anyone who pleads for God's mercy for another, when he or she himself needs the same thing, is answered first. And with that being said, what it is that in this scenario, you have, say, like person A and person B. Person B is lacking something, and in this particular case, is lacking mercy in a particular area of his or her life. So person A is praying that they be answered in a merciful fashion. And because person A actually has the ability, whether they're fully conscious of it or they're just doing it because they feel that's what they should do towards a friend, to extend a good thought and translate it into prayers. And the history of Jewish prayers, our tradition is that we actually speak it out. We're using one more element of your human experience, that is to say, not just take a thought and have a good thought about a person, but actually bring it down to your heart, where there is an empowered by the vocal cords and the five articulate organs that exist in one's mouth, and then praise, because person A is setting aside his or her own agenda and focusing that of B, since, so to speak, person A is on a higher level because they have the ability to bring some sort of positive outcome in a merciful fashion for person B. So not either, there's no superiority to either approach, but everyone has to make their own calculation. Just concluding with that, there are two people in a historical sense who were well-versed in the second approach, namely Abraham. Abraham was living at the time in the territory of the Plishtim, the Philistines, as we would call them today, and they had been cursed that they could not let out that which is inside their body, waste material, and Abraham, the prophet, prayed for them that they could in fact, be able to defecate or urinate and also to have children. And we see that, in according to our tradition, is that because he prayed for those people that they should be able to carry on their normal biological processes, when it came to his wife, Sarah, at 90 years old, gave birth to Isaac, or Yitzhak, as we know him in the Hebrew, that he was born in an easier fashion that should have been expected. The other person is Job, or Eov, who actually serve God out of love, which is brought down in the Talmudic tractate of Sota, which deals with the laws of testing a woman to see if she was faithful or unfaithful to her wife, that Eov, Job, prayed for his friends. And therefore, we see that it was an act of love that he prayed for his sons, and also, very interesting enough, that there is an opinion that holds that Eov or Job lived in the generation of Abraham. I just want to bring one more point out. It's tangential, but I think it's still to the point. In the commentaries on Job, Eve, that I have in my house, it's called Das Sofim, meaning the knowledge of the writers. It mentioned that actually, because at the time that Abraham lived for the first 58 years of his life, he lived within the end of the lifespan of Noah, who built the ark, and he actually was a student of Noah for 30 years. So we're tying this all up into one neat package, so we have to make a choice. Do we work to pray to purify ourselves and those of our community and our family, and then the nation that we're a part of? Or do we think of the merciful assistance that we hopefully can have the merit to actualize by praying for the benefits of other people? So Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, we must remember that we're all part of humanity. And the one thing that we're responsible for is ourselves. You are responsible for your soul, your conscience, your being, your physical being, your mental being. You come first. That doesn't mean to the exclusion of everybody else. Because if you can take care of yourself and make sure that you're on the right track and doing the correct things, then you can turn your attention to other people and see how much you can help them. Why? Because we're all part of the human experience. We can't forget that. So sometimes to figure out if you're doing the right thing, you cannot use what we call introspection, that is inspecting yourself. It's very hard to be critical of ourselves. We're very critical of other people. But ourselves, that's like looking in a mirror and calling that person names. You can't do it. Why? Because it's you. You rather have someone else in that mirror that you can call names. But anyhow, if you can take care of yourself and know that you're at peace with God and yourself, then you can worry about other humans, friends or non-friends. I don't care. I don't think you do too. But you must show kindness and some type of humanity towards them, so you do no harm. But you cannot forget about them, because we are all part of humanity, and we must practice living our lives and helping other people to live their lives.
Thank you, Dennis. Now, I just want to just do a shout-out that we have a couple of people tuning in. I hope the audio is clear enough for our listeners. From TikTok, we have Rave123, and we also have Dino Del Monte, and user 910-745-857-5104, and we also have Shlomo Benelvis. We're going to invite him if he wants to join our live discussion. So thank you, Dennis, for your input there. And I want to turn now to some teachings from Rambam on the Pirkei Avos, chapter 1, verse 5, which says as follows. The sixth teaching in the first chapter of the Ethics of the Fathers. Yeshua ben Parachia and Nitai of Arbel, meaning Yosef ben Yosef ben Yochanan, talked about that, his teachings in the last week, how to treat the poor as members of your house, that they said, Yeshua ben Parachia taught us, provide yourself with a master, acquire for yourself a every person favorably. That the idea of providing a master, there are people who just have greater knowledge than us. They've lived through more life. They've had more experiences. They might have a family. It's multi-generational, meaning they and their spouses, they and their children, they and their grandchildren. Those who are meritorious, super meritorious, them and their great-grandchildren. So this is a type of person that somehow is negotiated through the byways and highways and the difficulties of life. And this master, you're saying, say like master life coach, you'd say, you can confer and debate with them in this matter. The knowledge you gain should be retained and remembered even better because you've gotten feedback from someone way more advanced in the knowledge of living this life. For one cannot compare the effect, this is Rambam teaching us, for one cannot compare the effect of individual study to that study with another person. This even applies if one is on one's own level of wisdom, even when he's on a lower level, and this is the intent of this chart. I just want to mention, I have two teachers who I consider to be my masters, my mentors, we say in Hebrew, Mashpiyim. One is about 7 years old, Kainahara, and he arrived in America with nothing but a suitcase coming from Jerusalem. And now he has a business, he has grandchildren, he has children here in Eyrie Heights, Crown Heights, his children in Florida, his children, the daughter that's living in Paramus, New Jersey, doing communal service over there. So he's someone that I say anyone who could arrive with just a suitcase in America at the tender age of 19 or 20, and basically 50 years later can really
be established. He has his own home, Kanahara. Not bad. The other teacher or master that I have is actually 6 years younger than me. But again, he basically came with just a suitcase in his hand. He's a father. He's a husband. He's a grandfather. He helps produce Swarm of great significance for his father-in-law, who is one of the great teachers in our generation. So these are the type of people I personally like to confer with Blessed Souls, because I don't necessarily debate with them because their knowledge is so great, but I do seek feedback on certain personal family issues and even business decisions I've made in terms of my career development, social services. I consulted with both of them, and it's always been a constant source of encouragement. The next thing Rambam commenting on is in this Mishnah, it says, acquire for yourself a friend. Now, why does it say acquire, not provide, or make friends with others? So this emphasis is the importance of a friendship. For a person should always have a friend who will help him better in all aspects of his conduct. If one does not find easily a friend that one has acquired, one may make efforts in this direction. If necessary, one should procure his friendship until true friendship is established. One should not cease accommodating oneself to the other person's nature until such friendship has been established. Thus, the ethical masters have taught, do not establish friendship according to your nature, establish a friendship according to your friend's nature. When each of the friends conducts himself according to this directive, the desire of each will be to fulfill the will of his colleague. Thus, they will both share a single goal. And the humility of Rambam, as Rambam taught, I think, in Guides to Perplex, which Dennis has spoken in previous broadcasts going way back over the past almost 14 years, the Rambam was not ashamed to quote Aristotle. And Aristotle is quoted here in a teaching saying, it's called Nicomethean Ethics. He said, your other friend is really yourself. The Rambam continues, and then we'll turn to Dennis for some feedback. In general, there are three types of friends. A friend befriended for the sake of benefit, a friend befriended for the sake of satisfaction, a friend befriended for the sake of a higher purpose. Examples of friends befriended for the sake of benefit are two partners, or relationship between a king and his army. There are two types of friends befriended for the sake of satisfaction, a friend who one trusts and a friend who grants one pleasure. An example of a friend who grants one pleasure is relationship between men and women during marriage. A friend whom one trusts refers to a person of whom one can only rely without withholding anything from him, neither deed nor word. He reveals to him all his matters, how good and bad, without worrying that he will shame him, either in private or in public. When a person is able to trust a colleague so thoroughly, he will derive tremendous satisfaction from talking to him and sharing his company. The Rambam concludes in this section, a friend befriended for the sake of a higher purpose refers to a situation where both desire and focus on a single objective, doing good. Each will desire to draw strength from his colleague and to attain his good for them both. This is the type of friend the Mishnah commands us to acquire. For example, the comradeship between a teacher and his disciple, between a disciple and his teacher. That's your take on this matter, is that a friendship is not a freebie, it's not an entitlement. It's something that's to be worked on, and basically, to me, it's like it's not a marriage, but it certainly has the fragrance of a marriage, where one must be careful of what the needs of the other are, to the point where it might have to come before his or her needs. Your comment on these matters?
Well, all humanity needs humanity, and that is that you cannot think that you're an island by yourself. There's always somebody else who's in that same island that you are. But you don't know that until you start a dialogue. And that dialogue evolves over different things that are on your mind. And since we were not designed to be alone, it meant that we have other humans to talk to. And when we have a dialogue and exchange ideas, we get to know, does this person being helpful? Are they kind? Do they want to help me? Or is this a mean person? You can figure that out, but you can always figure out in the dialogue, are you getting something out of the dialogue that you didn't know before you met the person? This is very important because we are not perfect and nobody knows everything. So talk to other people, see what they have to say, accept some of their ideas. They'll accept some of your ideas. But we always are open to dialogue. And that's what keeps us humans going. If we were alone, we're not going to talk to the trees or the mountains or the grasses. We like to talk to other human beings. I mean, the animals we can talk to, but they don't talk back to us. So it's very hard to feel the understanding between living. When living is around, you got to live your thoughts and understand your friend or your neighbor or somebody else's thoughts so you can exchange those thoughts as to whether or not you have good thoughts, they have good thoughts, or they have better thoughts than yours. But it gives you a chance to measure yourself up to somebody else. And that is a type of humility that we all have, but very few people practice, believe it or not. We think that if we show what we're missing or give a hint to someone else, we're exposing ourselves in the worst way. That's not true. We are not perfect. We strive to always be better. That doesn't mean we're going to be perfect. Try to understand other people, and you'll find out that you're either listening to yourself or your own words, or you having something in common with other humans. It is there. The link is there. We are all part of humanity.
Thank you, Dennis. So we're going to go to those last section of Rambam, talking about just every person favorably. So the Rambam teaches us the following, and I'm paraphrasing certain areas for the sake of clarity and transparency. So what is this idea of judging every person favorably? Again, you know, Dennis mentioned before we have to connect with other people. But what happens when we connect to an old person? You don't really know this person's character, and you're not really aware yet if he or she is righteous or is lacking in righteousness. You saw that he or she performed a deed or made a statement that could be, according to a given set of circumstances, be defined as good. In other circumstances, that same action could be interpreted as being bad. So the Mishnah, the teaching of our oral tradition, is saying, judge the person favorably and do not think evil about him. When, however, a person is known to be righteous and renowned for his good deeds, one nevertheless saw him perform a deed that looks not so righteous from all vantage points and can be interpreted as a good deed only with great difficulty in a far-fetched manner, one is obligated to interpret it positively, since there is a possibility of doing so. It is forbidden to suspect him. In this regard, our sages said, quote, in the Tractate of Shabbat, oral Torah tradition, Talmudic writing, a person who suspects the worthy will be punished. Similarly, if a person is out and out wicked and his evil deeds are well known, but he performed a deed that looks positive from all vantage points, it's only with great difficulty and in a far-fetched manner that it can be interpreted as evil. One should take precautions and not believe that it is good. It is possible of being evil. Concerning this, it's written in Proverbs 26, verse 25, even when he listens to his voice in supplication, do not believe him. There are seven abominations in his heart. Now, I don't know what those abominations are, but we'd have to go to the explanations. What does that mean, seven? And what is his understanding of abominations? Hopefully, in the future, as this primary purpose of this presentation is to share teachings from Proverbs, we'll get to the heart of that matter, all puns intended. If, however, the person's identity is unknown, his conduct can be interpreted in either manner. It is an obligation for those who follow the path of piety to judge him in a favorable manner. So Dennis, this idea of judging every person favorably is a very, very heavy teaching, and it could make the difference between building a relationship or breaking it. And unfortunately, if we're too judgmental, we can actually extinguish a relationship. So your take on these matters?
Well, everybody should understand that there's only one real judge, and that is our Creator. Our Creator will judge you based on your life. And that's what you have to stand behind, was everything you accomplished or you didn't accomplish. But that's up to God to judge you. But we must be careful in human judgment, because human judgments can be flawed. But we have to be very careful, because if you're judging other people, could they judge you the same way? Are you prepared to accept judgment that you give out and then hear the same judgment from other people about you? We have to be very careful, because you can easily misjudge other people and they can misjudge you. That doesn't mean that we stop all dialogue. You should be able to find out when you start a dialogue what people are thinking, what they're expecting, and what they think is normal. That way, we can feed off on that and show them what we think is normal and what we think is good. So we exchange in a dialogue the knowledge that we have accumulated to have an intelligent conversation or a dialogue. But we must be very, very careful about judging. We have people that sometimes think they are the judge and they will decide who is good and bad. It doesn't work that way. Those people that think they're the judge of everybody else have a misconception. And the misconception is that they are taking God's place to judge other people. We cannot do that. We are not perfect. So be very, very careful how you judge other people, because they could use the same standards against you. Can you withstand those standards that you set up for other people so that they can judge you? Is that fair? Do you want to do that? Be careful in how you apply your judgment. You can withhold your judgment, but you have to do it judiciously. And that's a joke, because even doing that is forming another type of judgment. So we have to be careful as to who is calling the kettle black or white, good or bad, whatever color may be, whatever flavor of the day is. Because we can be judged accordingly. And if you will accept that type of judgment, well, now you're getting close to fairness. Because where is the equality? The equality evolves from our discussions and dialogues and accepting that we, as a whole, humanity, is not perfect. If we're not perfect, then we have to be careful about the things we're not 100% sure of. Yes, we have to be careful and withhold our judgment, because that is the sane and human thing to do. We don't go around looking for people's faults, because we all have faults. If we emphasize the negative or all the faults, we'll never get around to the good parts of humanity. And they're there. You just have to have a dialogue and find out what people are thinking and exchange ideas.
Thank you, Dennis. Now, we just mentioned about this Rambam. I'm not based on the teaching in Proverbs, the seven abominations of the heart. I'm not familiar with that, but it happens to be in a synchronicity fashion that there's a teaching from a Rebbe based on teaching of his father-in-law, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, that all character traits, even those that are not good, or even an evil in name and description, can be used as a lesson in serving Creator according to the Torah. Now, in this vein, there was a tzaddik who lived in the 18th century. I don't know if he made it to the 19th century, the early part. He definitely lived in vast majority of the 18th century. His name is Rav Meshulam Zusiv Hanapoli, somewhere in Russia. So he said that as terms of worth ethic, we can learn a certain worth ethic from a person who's engaged in something very negative, literally a thief. And I'm going to read off the seven attributes, and I'm not trying to imply these are the seven abominations of the heart, seven methods by which a thief in his mistaken level, or her mistaken level, because it could be a female or a male, let's face it, that they have a certain ethic in how to accomplish their unethical behavior. And I also remember there was a teaching from a great Torah sage who was asked, why do we have to learn about the negative stories in the Tanakh, which is basically the five books of Moses and the book of Judges and all the prophets and all the holy writings like Proverbs and he said we shouldn't try to emulate. But here, on another plane of understanding, again, this might shake some people, but you can actually have seven positive things in terms of how do we go about our day, whether it be working simply, understood as a worker works, or in the spiritual realms, in our spiritual. These are the seven approaches of a thief, if he or she wants to be successful in the thievery, and hopefully no one wants to steal anymore. Number one, a thief is modest, meaning they really don't want to go about making a big noise about what they're trying to accomplish, which is basically to steal. Number two, the thief is prepared to endanger himself or herself, literally self-sacrifice. Number three, the minutest details are as important to him as greater considerations. Whatever it may be, in the course of the plan of to deactivate the alarm system, to make sure he needs no fingerprints or footprints, if that's possible. Number four, the fourth point is he labors with great exertion. The fifth point is that he works quickly. Alacrity is a very, very holy trait, but unfortunately it's being schlepped down, so we say he is dragged down into negative works. And the sixth attribute, or the sixth worth ethic, he exhibits trust and hope that he'll be able to succeed. In fact, there's a Talmudic tractate that the thief prays to God he should be successful. Well, if he really had true faith, this is called the bad faith, Amunah Ra, as opposed to Amunah Tova, he should have prayed that he'd be provided his sustenance by not having to break into someone's house. And last but not least, which is something that most successful people can testify to, does apply in the road to success at whatever level, spiritual, cognitive, financial. If he or she fails the first time, he or she tries and tries again. They don't give up. Dennis, again, these are not the seven abominations of the heart, but taking seven negatives from the behavior of a thief, and as they say, taking lemon and squeezing and deriving from lemonade, which can nurture us. So we can be nurtured actually from the negative activities of a thief, not to emulate a thief, but to consider if that person is willing to go to that level to accomplish that is wrong, we can make that effort to try to do something that's right in this world. Your take on these matters?
Well, there's two main ways of learning. One is to hear the good parts and the great things that could happen if you follow the good parts. And that's why we have good books like Bibles and other prayer books that will lead us into positive areas. So we can accumulate as much as we can on a positive basis. But since we are imperfect and we are human, we must learn from our mistakes. Everybody will make mistakes. We hope that when you're younger, you'll make little mistakes and you'll learn little things that will build up as time goes by and you understand what life is all about. However, you must learn from your mistakes because you don't want to repeat them. So the whole concept is you can do better by reducing your mistakes. You're not perfect and you can easily make mistakes, but you don't want to do any harm or hurt other people. So therefore, learn from your mistakes, try to understand where you went wrong, and correct that action so it doesn't happen again. The worst thing you can do is repeat your mistakes. That means you never learn from them. Why go through life where you're asking somebody to kick you in the backside, even though you know better? Learn from your mistakes, and you will be a smarter and better person.
Thank you, Dennis. Now we're going to move on to the flagship presentation of this program. Solomon, we're in chapter 3, verse 34, and we just talked about learning from the attributes of someone engaged in something which is not positive, because either we heard about it, we read about it, we saw them somewhere in cyberspace, but King Solomon wants us very wary to actively go into an area of negativity. He's going to openly admonish anyone, as he says right now in chapter 3, verse 34, if one goes to the scoffers, he will scoff. Then King Solomon turns the boat in the other direction, the verbal boat, the cognitive boat, the spiritual boat, the emotional boat. But if a person goes to the humble, he invokes grace. And the commentaries, Rashi said that if a person is attracted to scoffers, guess what? It's going to rub off on that person, he'll scoff. But if a person goes to the humble, he or she will evoke grace, because eventually, if he or she can internalize how humble people conduct themselves in their daily lives, and humble doesn't mean that they have low self-esteem, but it means they are very appreciative of all the blessings they have in this world. If he joins the humble, eventually his deeds will evoke grace in people's eyes. So Dennis, this out-and-out strong advice, it's, on the one hand, it's rebuke for joining the scoffer, on the one hand, it's active encouragement to go to the humble. How does a person have the type of differentiation in their mind, and how to, because sometimes a scoffer could be someone who tells very light, you know, very light, funny jokes, and sometimes the humble can speak very assertively. So a person might think the person who's speaking over in an over a certain manner, when actually he or she is speaking in a righteous fashion, they could misinterpret it, and them could be the scoffers, and the person feels like a very innocent joke. He or she is concealing what their agenda is really, is to be a mocker of anything that is positive and productive and nurturing for an individual's family, individual's community, or even the nation, and to stigmatize an entire nation of people. Your take on these matters based on the teachings of King Solomon.
Well, it's all a question of belief. We humans like to believe that everything's going to work out fine. But there are some people who believe that a crack in the sidewalk is going to open up and they're going to step in it and they're going to be swallowed up. Or they're going to believe that on a nasty day, a strike of lightning is going to strike them down dead. If you believe, you are on the positive side. So we don't go about life thinking that something bad is going to happen to me, I just don't know when. No. We wake up each morning thinking it's going to be positive. We don't wake up each morning thinking of the bad things or the worst things that could happen. If you do that, then your fear is taking over and your belief is not strong enough that God put you here for a purpose, and that's what you're going to do every day you wake up. You're going to alert all your senses, be positive, do good, no harm, and you're going to live your life as it was meant to be. But if you start letting your mind wander, and you're not too sure about your beliefs, you're going to open the door up for bad things that could happen to you. And out of fear, those feelings will change. You will lose your positive outlook, thinking that, oh my goodness, too many things can happen to me. Well, they don't. So believe in positive things. Yes, some people are unfortunate, and they always seem to be in some type of trouble. Not necessarily their fault, but they get into some type of trouble. Well, some people are like that. But if you believe that you're going to do good, follow what God wants you to do, you will enjoy your life and be positive.
Thank you, Dennis. We're going further into chapter 3, verse 35. And it's just so obvious that I'm not even going to go into the oral Torah tradition, you know, explanations. Chapter 3, verse 35, the wise shall inherit honor, but the fools take disgrace as their portion. I will say this, is that there is a teaching from the oral Torah tradition of Israel that a person who runs for honor repels honor from being showered upon him or her, but a person who runs away from honor and is acting in a proper fashion from the perspective of their soul garments of thought, speech, and action, honor shall pursue them. So a person who acts properly, honor shall come to them, and they shall be anointed with a type of grace. You can dice and slice it any way you want, whether divine or cognitive or spiritual or emotional grace. But people feel it. People sense it. Whether the person is extremely physically handsome, or maybe not the most handsome person on the block, he or she, but because they are so wise, they are engaged in speech and actions which are very wise, which are indicative of his or her wisdom, that they are, in fact, honored. And fools walk away in a very sorrowful manner because they refuse to receive wisdom, to grow. I mean basically, let's break it down to the most simple component of it. And again, this is not oral Torah tradition. I'm just speaking from the heart and from the kishkas, as we say, from my guts, that a fool on the most simple level is just someone who doesn't want to grow as a human. I mean, I've learned, and maybe Dennis, you can correct me on this, I heard that a fish will grow as long as it can live. The fish don't live forever because a bigger fish usually comes along and eats the smaller fish, even if the smaller fish has grown. So what can we do, Dennis, to encourage our fellow human beings, man, woman, child, young child, adolescent, teenager, young adult, middle-aged adult, elderly? It's worth their while, not because they're just going to get honored, but because it's a more pleasant life. Sometimes it's painful, too, because when a person gets wiser, they have to bear the negativities of people. Sometimes they get jealous of this wisdom or just think it's irrelevant. So what can we do to encourage people to seek wisdom and to reject foolishness?
Well, if you're fair, good, and you believe in other people, that alone will show other people that you can accept them. And they can feel it too. So it's not a question, are you a sheep? Are you a good person or a bad person in sheep's clothing? Do you smile, but your eyes give you away that you really have bad intentions? Sometimes you cannot tell by the smile or by the look in the eyes. So you have to rely on your judging type of powers as to whether the person is positive or negative. After an opening dialogue, you can usually feel what the other person is about and whether to continue the dialogue or go to another person. But we have feelings. Those feelings radiate to other humans around us. If you're a good, positive, fair person, people will see that, and you will draw similar people like a magnet to yourself.
Well,
and you...
I'm sorry, I tried to bring some three people to TikTok, and it interfered with your pieces talking, so I apologize for that. It doesn't seem like we can have an effective conversation with TikTok. But okay, that's okay. Can you continue, please? Dennis?
You mean you want me to continue?
Yeah. Because according to the logistics of just how this town comes out, it's not going to be an effective conversation. People have to only call in through the people are watching. I see, but for us to have a communication,
okay.
I have to do a tick to the exclusions. I'm sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. In a nutshell, if you do good, if you're fair and kind, and you want to do no harm to anybody, that radiates to other humans. They can feel the way you are acting, behaving, looking. So we know sometimes certain people sound not only good, but they are good. And we radiate towards them. Why? Because we have something positive in common. And that's what humans are always looking for. That's why salesmen try to get the best part of you so that you can put your hand in your pocket and help out their pocket. That's why politicians think that they can smile and get beautiful teeth in their smile and you will vote for them, because that's how they get your vote in their pocket. But we all know that you have to have the feeling as to whether or not this person is positive or not. Can I trust them? Do I believe in them? Are they worth engaging? We all make those decisions with other humans. So we have to have our guard up and be careful. But on a positive basis, you will find people that are similar to you after a short dialogue, even after a long dialogue. But you will get the feeling. And that's why we have so many senses. As humans, we can use them, but we got to use them as a whole thing so that we can accept or reject other humans. Use your faculties well. They were given to you by God. Don't waste them.
Thank you, Dennis. We're going to say one more verse, chapter 4, verse 1, because believe it or not, coming down about the last 7:30 of the program. I think it's been a very fertile presentation. We missed having Jimmy and even Howard to see how things are going with his relationship with his wife, and trying to dissuade her not to fly to Italy because of certain anxiety issues. We hope everything will be in a peaceful and pleasant manner. Ending up with chapter 4, verse 1 in Proverbs, children. And here's a great calling out to all the people of the world by King Solomon. He didn't say Jewish people, he said children. And again, one of the motivating factors in making this presentation is humble effort of reading, sharing teachings of Proverbs with the written and oral traditions of Israel. The whole world is that the Lubavitch Rebbe had advised Mayor John Lindsay, who was mayor of New York 50-plus years ago. Probably, I don't know if he made it to the 1970s as mayor, but I know in the late 60s he was the mayor of New York. Children, hearken to the discipline of the father and listen to no understanding. So, the Mitzvah Davar Kamah, this is one of the most beautiful oral Torah traditions, I think, that we have here. Mitzvah Davar says this: you, the children of the living God, hearken to the discipline of the Father in heaven, who disciplines concerning the understanding and listen to know. The Ibn Nachmayish, Miash, says the verse simply, as the teacher is instructing his disciples concerning the understanding of the Torah. In the previous chapters of Proverbs, the father admonished his son. In this chapter, the teacher admonishes his disciples, also known as children. As we see in the book of Kings 1, chapter 20, verse 35, the disciples of the prophets are called children. Indeed, the teacher is higher than the father, since he brings pupils into the world to come, or Dennis, as you like to say, to heaven, while his father brings his children all into this world. Of course, a father can be a learned person at whatever level with wisdom of life, but also help a child to come to the world to come, or as you would say, heaven. Dennis, reporting on this last verse of today's presentation, how can we encourage people to realize godly teachings are universal, and the Creator wants us to hearken to Creator's teachings, and we become children of the Creator. We are children of the Creator, but much more blessed by hearkening to the discipline or the structure that is offered for various spiritual teachings. Now, I'm not going to be ethnocentric saying you can all go through the Torah. I go through the Torah, You can dice and slice it. You want blessed souls with your particular faith-based system, but ultimately in any system that's faith-based, ultimately it's referring to a creator, a god, I would think so, or a godly mindset, not to an angel, not to a light. Then it's more to encourage people to seek out our Father in heaven in order we get to the heaven that you've been talking about for the past almost 14 years.
Well, when we were children, we were pure. Why? Because we didn't know anything negatively. We were learning everything, absorbing everything around us. And that was a positive type of deal. It wasn't until we got older and picked up bad habits. Those habits come when you start deciding whether or not you're going to follow a good path or a bad path. When you have to make that decision, can you accidentally make the wrong decision? Of course you can. But if you're not learning from your mistakes, you'll never get back to the purity you had when you were first born. So you may resent that for the rest of your life, that you didn't correct yourself as you got older. You came up with a whole bunch of excuses, but you couldn't accept the purity that you were born with. Did you learn too much? Good things, bad things? What did you do with those bad things you learned? You couldn't ignore them because you had to look into them to see if they were worthwhile. But once you found out they were bad, why continue doing bad things when there's so many good things? So if you look back as to when you were born and when you were growing up as a child, you didn't have those bad things in your mind. Why? Because you weren't born with them. You were born on a positive purity, pure values. Those values you'll never see as you get older because you start to understand bad things. But you must get rid of those bad things or else they become habits and you are going to be infected. We look for medical help, but as we get older, we look for intelligent help to save us from anything that's negative. So think positive and love God.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to thank you again for using your most precious commodities, your time on your day off, your day of meditation, learning, meeting with your family, whatever level you're able to, this day, whether it's in your proximity. I want to thank everyone for listening in. And we had 20, by the way, Dennis, we had 24 listeners live on TikTok, and I'm sure many more on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to end off and segue out of today's program with something that we also come to embrace as we recall our relationships with people in the past, present, and hopefully future relationships. Future, may all people be blessed and have many positive relationships. A relationship with the wise and the masters of life. This is a song called We May All Be Different. It's a song which has no musical instruments. The only musical instrument you'll be hearing this song, but so is the human voice, which is a wonderful instrument. And this was by Benny Friedman featuring a Joey Newcomb. So I want to wish everyone, and hopefully with the pouring out of my heart and soul, there be peace in the world in the way of Ahava Chad, one love. Glory to God, one destiny, Kulanov, always, but Darkly Shalom, and no one should be anointed, and no one should be disappointed that they've been anointed with the Telemokim, the divine image, which is your human intellect configured to the highest realms of your soul up in heaven and down here on earth. So here we go. This is We All May Be Different by Joey Newcomb with Benny Friedman. Enjoy, everyone, and everyone be safe, and hopefully we'll reconvene next Sunday morning. Take care, everyone.
Much the same, different faces, different names, can we still share joy and pain? We may all feel different, but we share a beating heart. Why should we be torn apart from each other? We may all think different, and at times we don't agree. Can we understand and see that we're still a family? We may all be different, we can heal and reconnect to each other. In a world that is crying out in pain, you and I are the ones who can make things change. If I dare to reach out to you, will you cross the divide? We can build it all anew if we can unite.
As all human beings.
In a world that is crying out.